This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons with Texas Scorecard. We're taking a look at some of the biggest stories that happened in Texas this week. I'm joined this morning by Jeremy Kitchen, our Capitol correspondent, as we talk what else but the latest developments on this third special session. Some new little bit of infighting, I suppose you could say, in the state capitol in Austin. And I want to start out talking, you know, elections really kind of became a big topic this week. It was a big topic this summer already as lawmakers worked on an elections integrity bill during the special session. But now you have, President Donald Trump out there saying that lawmakers should be adding a forensic audit to the special session.
That's right. He submitted a letter, a public letter, obviously, where he implored Governor Abbott to add this to the ongoing special session call, specifically citing a bill by Representative Steve Toth, House Bill 16, which calls for a forensic audit of the 2020 general election. And to this, we haven't really seen much of a response as of yet, at least from Abbott, other than an interview, right, he did on Fox News.
Yes. Earlier this week, Governor Greg Abbott said on a Fox News interview that this process began months ago.
Right.
Some of the local officials in like Harris County, which is one of these counties that is under this new forensic audit, says they dispute that actually was not happening.
Right.
But we also had this week the Secretary of State's office releasing details of how this forensic audit in those four major counties is going to work.
It's important too, like the Secretary of State's office and not the Secretary of State
yeah.
themselves, because we currently don't have a Secretary of State. Right,
exactly right. We've been, since the regular session ended in May, we've been without a Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. And so now you've just kind of got the bones, the staff, the people there in the office. That wasn't even the biggest, I think, piece of election related news. The biggest one was a little bit of a blow up that happened last night. Which requires a little bit of an explanation.
Sure.
We reported at Texas Scorecard, Aaron Anderson last week, reported on some revelations by Grassroots America, We the People, mm-hmm. a great conservative group out in Tyler, that the election integrity bill that was passed by the legislature during the second special session earlier this summer actually weakened penalties.
That's right. So this took the form of Senate Bill 1 from the last special session. It feels like we're in special session infinity, but mm-hmm. Senate Bill 1 and Grassroots America, We the People kind of determined, they figured out that one of the amendments that got on while the bill was being deliberated in the House by Representative Steve Allison, a Republican out of San Antonio,
right.
Lowered the penalty right for illegal voting, and so that actually get it on the bill. The Senate, of course, confirmed it. Governor signed it, became law. So they reported on that. How can we have this increased election integrity, if you will, if we're going to lower penalties for
illegal voting? Yeah,
right.
Taking it from a felony down to a misdemeanor.
That's right.
Sort of the opposite of what a lot of activists were saying we wanted when you
right.
talk about election integrity. And yet you had the governor and you had the lieutenant governor. You had them all out there. At the bill signing, rallying around this work that's done, and really it took a matter of a few weeks for that grassroots pressure to sort of build up.
Sure.
And now you see the governor saying, okay, yes, we need to address this. We need to fix this mistake that was made by Texas House Republicans.
That's right. And so he added it officially yesterday to the call. So now there's 8 priorities on the overall agenda for the current special session.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of them. And then the bill actually got filed today, or a bill got filed today to address it by State Senator Brian Hughes, who was the author, of course, of the overall election integrity bill. And that's taking the form of Senate Bill 9.
Okay, so looks like the Senate will get to work on that probably pretty soon. Lieutenant
right.
Governor Dan Patrick quickly said that he was in support of this move from the governor, blamed the House,
right.
I think rightly so in this situation, for at least introducing the error. Certainly wasn't caught when it went to the Senate.
Sure.
But we got a completely different response from the Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan.
Yeah, he tweeted out a statement, which was interesting. I think it kind of spoke to the political tumult that exists in the House, certainly, right, which is basically we have no interest in addressing or relitigating this issue. Look, this issue itself, election integrity, prompted these quorum breaks, mm-hmm. as he cited, and it seems like he doesn't have the gumption to necessarily bring that up.
Saying we don't want to relitigate it. Right. This is essentially, you know, the governor saying, want you to fix this mistake you made. Senate saying yes. Different lawmakers lining up saying yes.
Sure.
And then Speaker of the House State Phelan saying no. Right. And I think this is probably one of the most high profile potential standoffs or showdowns that we've seen since Phelan has been elected Speaker.
Sure. I mean, look, I think it's important to note that we're, I think, 12 days into the ongoing special session, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, clock is ticking, technically. And yeah, you see, this is the first time, at least that I can remember in the near recent history, where you've got Phelan that's outwardly opposite of Governor Abbott on something. I don't think the governor necessarily wants to end the special session without having accomplished this.
Well, I mean, he went out on a limb, right? He put it on the agenda yesterday. You know, what kind of response do you expect to see?
Yeah, I think, like, it's politically volatile, right? You've also got the very political process of redistricting happening at the same mm-hmm. time. So, like, do you want to give cause? Again, remember, the House did not exact penalties on absent Democrats.
That's right.
They didn't change it for future, like, to prevent future quorum breaks. And so you have the possibility that you give them an excuse again, right?
Leave again. Well, you know, we've mentioned it before. Nothing has changed since right. they did it the first time, or really the second time or third right. time. Nothing really stopping Democrats from leaving again. I mean, sure. they still have their chairmanships. They still mm-hmm. have their offices and their budgets and this and that. No reason really for them not to leave. Looks like Speaker Phelan trying to placate them, sure. putting that ahead of the governor and of more importantly, Republican grassroots.
Yeah, seemingly. I would definitely agree. I mean, time will only tell to see how this kind of takes shape. I don't imagine, based on Phelan's tweet, that we'll see some kind of House Republican leadership approved bill, right, prioritized. To my knowledge, we haven't seen just a bill filed in the House yet right. to address it. Right now, it's just Senator Hughes who's filed a bill.
Interesting. Expect to see some more on that maybe even today.
So it did get referred yeah. to the Senate State Affairs Committee. I don't believe it's been scheduled for a hearing.
Okay.
Yet, so.
Yeah, we'll be following that one closely, see if we get a response from some of those state House members or Governor Abbott. But speaking of elections, we actually had a couple of special elections happening right. this last Tuesday. One was a special election runoff. One was just a special election, both for the Texas House. And one, you have Brian Harrison now joining the Texas House in House District 10. That's up in North Texas to replace Jake Elzey, mm-hmm. who won his seat for Congress.
That's right. So it feels like we're in like perpetual election mode.
Yeah, a lot of domino effect, right?
Sure.
You know, Jake Elzey decides to run for Congress. There's a runoff, then he's gone. Now we've got a special election, that special election runoff. May this cycle has ended, at least for now, in that district.
Yeah. That's right. He has not been sworn in yet, to my knowledge, right? Yeah. And so that'll take place. Maybe, I don't know if that takes place during the special. That might, has to take place at some period of time, and he'll fulfill at least the remainder yep. of that term and then, of course, have to run, right?
Right. And then down a different part of the state, but in San Antonio, voters have a special runoff mm-hmm. election coming up. That date has not been set yet by the governor, but you've got Republican John Lujan, who got 42% of the vote. It was like a 5 or 6 way race, something like that. Got 42% of the vote, and Democrat Frank Ramirez coming in second with 20%. Of course, there were more Democrats in that race, probably as a plurality, so it's actually a lot closer than
sure.
that would make it seem. You know, this is an interesting choice. We were talking about this before the show started, that in one hand, you've got a Democrat in Frank Ramirez who appears to be kind of your garden variety, right, liberal
sure.
Democrat. At the same time, you have John Lujan, who a lot of Republican, at least, you know, leadership has rallied around in
right.
recent years on his kind of multiple attempts at running for office. A lot of groups have backed him. I think even Governor Abbott has backed him
right.
at times. You have him, even as recently as a week or two ago, espousing Democrat positions.
That's right. Joining the rest of his Republican colleagues, by, if you will, in the San Antonio area, he espoused support for expanding Medicaid, which, of course, is not something that's in the Republican Party of Texas priority. Yeah. In fact, the complete opposite right, is in there, but he at least alluded to his support for that. It's important to note that special election, there were three Democrats and two Republicans. He was the Republican that won out in that, and is now be going to the special election runoff. If you will, he was also a former state representative himself, but he only served in the interim period, lost the general election, didn't end up serving during a legislative session.
Well, in other election news, you've got a new entrant into the race for lieutenant governor on the Democrat side. Okay, the Democrats are putting up their candidates for lieutenant governor. Already you had Mike Collier, who ran back in 2018 against governor, lieutenant governor Dan Patrick, to be the lieutenant governor of Texas. He's already said he's going to be running in the race. But now you've got former Bush advisor Matthew Dowd, who's thrown his hat into the ring for lieutenant governor as a Democrat. And so far, he's gotten a pretty rocky start.
I mean, I don't really even know where to start here. I think the most notable thing is, of course, he had posted a video, right, in his kind of announcement thing where he was talking about the Sutherland Springs
shooting,
but he mislabeled it as Sunderland Springs.
I think he missed it. It was a double typo. Certainly typos happen, but you're announcing a statewide campaign. Perhaps you're not. You know, it looks like his campaign, right, is based around blaming Patrick for, you know, the El Paso shooting that happened a couple years ago, the winter storm blackouts, a lot of those issues. And so we'll see. We'll see if he's able to get. Already, you see some Democrats pushing back just simply based on the fact that he worked for the Bush administration, even though he says that he had denounced the Republican Party back in 2007.
That's right. It's fascinating. It'll be fascinating to see this play out in an election cycle for sure.
Well, some of those elections coming up next year will be determined based on how the maps are drawn, and we've kind of been writing about these proposed redistricting maps for Congress, for the Texas Senate, as they've been released. And just yesterday, we finally got, I think, the last, but perhaps the most hotly anticipated, which are the maps for the Texas House districts. Okay, it's 150 districts, so it's a lot of work. You can kind of forgive them for maybe taking a little bit of extra time on it. But we kind of talked about some key takeaways. I think the first is that it largely, right, as expected, shores up some of those incumbent Republicans.
That's right. You know, specifically off the top of my head, I'm thinking, you know, you have these kind of competitive races up in the DFW area, for instance, right? You had Morgan Meyer in House District 108. You had Angie Chin Button, both Republicans up in that area that have had close calls the last few election cycles. It works to kind of shore up their districts, make it towards less competitive, if you will, for Democrats. And you've got a few examples of that around the state, for sure. But that's to be expected in this kind of political process.
One note. Notable exception to that, though, would be up in Tarrant County, where you've got State Representative Jeff Kaysen, a freshman who had a conservative voting record, came in this session, and now he's being kind of redrawn into a Democrat district. Even though I think this is the only case where you see a Republican district that was redrawn into a Democrat
district. He is the only Republican that is kind of getting the short end of the stick here, and the district is being written in favor of a Democrat. There might be a few reasons for that. I think chief among them is, you might recall, he voted against the speaker in the beginning of the legislative session, and this could potentially be one of many penalties, sort of being exacted on him for that. I think, to me, out of all the takeaways from the House redistricting maps, this to me speaks the most about House Republican leadership not necessarily caring about the plurality of Republicans, but more caring about the Republicans they can control.
I was even told that Representative Kaysen was not even shown the map until yesterday, right before it came out, right? But you've also got, in addition to him being targeted, you've also got some specific Democrats that look like they're going to have an uphill battle. Here in Central Texas, in Williamson County, you've got James Tallarico. He's a sophomore, I think. Came in was elected in 2018. Looks like his district now is going to be more Republican.
That's right. So he is actually my state representative, but he replaced former kind of liberal Republican Larry Gonzalez mm-hmm. out that way. He flipped the district when he was not running for re-election. He flipped the district blue. The last two cycles, he has had Republican challengers. He's managed to beat them by a few points, mm-hmm. Obviously, but certainly a target. Also, quorum-busting Democrat, of course, who returned, one of the few that eventually returned. But yes, so they expanded his district in this proposed map, and seemingly, if you kind of look down into the data, gave some more Republican-friendly precincts and stuff thrown in there to probably throw off. Now, he does have two Republican challengers already as well.
So. You've got Aaron Zwiener as well, whose district is being redrawn to be more Republican. We'll actually be talking about her more as well. She's down just south of Austin, mm-hmm. so kind of the Hayes County area.
Yeah.
Michelle Beckley, this one's a fun one. Michelle Beckley was the State House member, a Democrat from up in Carrollton, up in Denton County, mm-hmm. who went to D.C., left quorum, you know, busted quorum with them, went to D.C., and then a couple weeks later said, I want to run for Congress.
Right.
And now with the new maps for both Congress and the Texas House, it looks like both doors have been shut for her.
That's right. She is drawn out of those maps. I think, to me, the most kind of hilarious thing to come out of that is that she tweeted something to the effect last night of like, well, I'm written out of these, kind of observing.
Yeah, what am I supposed to run for?
What am I supposed to run for? As if, like, it's just expected that she runs for something,
right.
You know?
What a shame, yeah. Right? Maybe she'll run. She said maybe she'll run for county judge.
Sure.
Maybe. We'll take a look. But right now, it's not looking too good for Representative Beckley. One that was pretty interesting is Ryan Guillen, who has a district down in South Texas, covers a number of counties, goes
sure.
down to the border area. He had a district that already is a Democrat, is a pro-life Democrat, mm-hmm. is probably on the more conservative ends of Democrats.
Sure.
Did not, notably, was one of the few that did not go to Washington, D.C., that did stay.
Mm-hmm.
His district is getting more Republican.
That's right. They kind of drew it in a way that I don't think penalizing him is the right word, but it's makes it harder for him to run for re-election, I
sure.
think. You know, which is interesting because you would have thought him staying back, behind
might have helped, right?
Might have helped. You know, he is kind of in the maybe not the immediate leadership circle, but he's a chairman of a committee, you
mm-hmm.
know, like he's kind of always been loyal to the establishment, if you will, that exists in the House. And yeah, his district expanded to be much more favorable to Republicans, so it'll be interesting to see.
Same thing happened with Tracy King down there as well. But you've got three potential matchups. This is when two incumbent members get put in the same district, right?
Right.
And so they have to run against each other. You got one in El Paso where you've got Lena Ortega and Claudia Ordaz-Perez, who is a freshman.
That's right.
Both Democrats. Being drawn into the same district, looks like they'll potentially have to run against each other.
That's right. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Lena Ortega has been around maybe three sessions, maybe
or so,
three or
yeah.
four. Yeah. Claudia Ordaz-Perez, to your point, is a freshman Democrat. They were both quorum-busting Democrats as well. Both fairly progressive or liberal
mm-hmm.
Bent, and so that'll be an interesting primary challenge for sure.
In Southeast Texas. In the Fort Bend County area, mm-hmm. just west of Houston, you've got a potential matchup shaping up where J.C. Jaton, who is a freshman, would be potentially squaring off against Phil Stevenson, someone who's been there longer.
Sure.
Interestingly, a little bit of confusion about this. Phil Stevenson has lived in Wharton. However, there's some talk that perhaps he has moved to Fort Bend County
right.
or actually resides there now, which would put him in that J.C. Jaton district. And there's been a little bit of kind of back and forth fighting between them over the last 24 hours.
That's right. I mean, I think brass tacks, regardless of how that the infighting happens, is this seems like an absolute kind of attempt by Republican leadership to kind of push mm-hmm. Stevenson out. You might recall, I believe Stevenson was one of the targeted folks on the famed list.
Oh,
if I
yes.
recall correctly, right? As well from last go around. But he's been there for a long time, and mm-hmm. he does votes. He's got an interesting voting record where sometimes he votes opposite of the kind of mainstream Republican
mm-hmm.
there. Sometimes he doesn't. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out and if he maybe just doesn't seek re-election.
Yeah, was one of the members, I believe, that voted to disallow Democrats from holding committee
That's
chair
true.
Positions,
mm-hmm.
Which was just, I suppose, an unforgivable.
Sure, it's untenable.
Yeah,
in the House. Yeah.
So, gotta go.
Yeah.
In Central Texas, you've got Kyle Biederman, who his district has really been redrawn. It's sort of a a hill country kind of district. It's got Gillespie County with Fredericksburg and kind of goes down a little bit south, down connects to New Braunfels. Of course, the population boom in New Braunfels has changed a lot of the distribution of where that district will be right now. And so now it looks like if Kyle Biederman were to stay in his Fredericksburg residence, he would be pitted against Terry Wilson, who lives right in Marble Falls. Interestingly, though, Kyle Biederman has said that he also owns a house in New Braunfels, which would actually put him in this kind of new district that would be part of Hays County and Kamal County.
Right, that's right. I mean, I think either way, the takeaway is this potentially a penalty, right, for kind of voting against the Republican sort of establishment in the House is mm-hmm. that he's got to make the choice. And he was very quick, obviously, to kind of post to social media that he does have a house. He's had a residence there in Kamal, I think, Kamal County mm-hmm. for some time. And so that's what he'll declare, you know, to maybe not pit to have a an election versus someone like a Terry Wilson. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, it's it certainly changes the shape of his current district.
This was the most surprising thing to me. I think when we talked about what potential redistricting would look like and what potential matchups and things like that that you'd have, the most surprising thing to me is that Brian Slayton, a freshman who's been an outspoken kind of conservative against leadership on many issues, his district stays exactly the same.
That's right. I mean, I think we had heard reports all throughout the regular session, right, that that Representative Slayton was one that they were specifically trying to target. They were trying to figure out how they were going to kind of change his district, mm-hmm. where it wasn't was not favorable to him. And certainly the outcome of the proposed map is that his stays the same. And it looks like they were able to kind of avoid mm-hmm. some of those election, those potential primary election challenges by taking former, you know, or not former, but soon to be former, State Representative Chris Patty's district, House District 9, and moving that. Of course, you've got James White, also in East Texas, who announced his race for Agriculture Commissioner, yep. challenging Sid Miller. So they moved that district, and so they were able to kind of move it to where it avoided that.
Interesting. So what are the next steps now for these House maps now that they're released?
Sure. So House Bill 1, has been referred to the House Redistricting Committee. It's got a hearing scheduled for Monday. In committee, and then, you know, assuming they kind of follow the same line that the Senate's followed on its committee hearings, imagine there'd be one or two of those before they maybe make some changes based on those suggestions, and then they vote it to eventually make its way to the House floor. It is important to note here, right, mm-hmm. is that, like, I think you had the governor yesterday at an event. We've heard, I wrote about this in an article from a few days ago, where it's already being kind of reported in circles in the Capitol, both by staff and lawmakers, that Phelan has told them, Speaker Phelan has told them that they might be back for a fourth special to address this
right.
issue.
So. The never-ending legislative session of 2021. Okay, other than redistricting, the session started off with 5 priority items from the governor put on the agenda. It's now since grown to 8 items. Right. Just real quick, what's the status of those bills right now in both chambers?
Sure. So the Senate, same as last week, they've passed 4 of the 8. The House, in comparison, has passed 0 of the 8. But the Senate's passed 4 of the 8. They are at least working, the remaining 4 at least working through the process, kind of been scheduled for committee hearings and what have you, to include the one that was added by Abbott yesterday, an increase in penalty for illegal voting. That's been referred to committee. The House, on the other side, they have referred most of these bills to committees, and committees met this week, but none thus far have made it to the House floor. They have not voted on anything as of yet, to include the Senate bills that have already kind of come over and been
all
referred.
Right, well, and then the clock is ticking, right?
That's right. clock is ticking. Now, you never know, right? Like the last special session, for instance, the House couldn't get to work until like 11 or 12 days into the session, and they ended up ending early, right? I mean, and you saw too, I mean, you've seen multiple examples in the Senate where a bill is filed the same day, gone through the committee process, and then passed, right? So it's whatever they choose to prioritize.
Especially in the Senate, we've seen, sure. right? I mean, if something is a priority, lawmakers can make it sure. happen really, really quickly. Well, thanks for covering all that with us, Jeremy. I want to remind folks that on December 4th, okay, we've got our Conservative Leader Awards happening in Irving, Texas. We've got early bird pricing going on now at texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. If you're watching live, we'll drop that link down there, but that's texasscorecard.com/CLA2021. Also, if you're at our website, I want to let people know, of course, that we're accepting applications now for spring, summer, and fall of 2022 for our Texas Scorecard Fellowship. If you know someone between the ages of 18 to 25 who'd like to come work with us here at Texas Scorecard for a semester and be paid for it too, please check that out. And that's at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. I want to thank everybody for watching. I know it's a lot as we look at what the legislature's doing and probably more importantly what they're not doing. But I want to say thank you to everybody watching. We got Teresa, I see here from DFW, Don watching from San Antonio, Sarah tuning in from Austin, Maggie watching from Burleson, and Tony in El Paso. If you have any questions as we continue to look at what happens with redistricting, what happens with election integrity, any of these issues, please don't hesitate to drop some questions down in the comments or reach out to us directly. We'd love to look into those issues for you. But for right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.